The opinions expressed in this program reflect only those of the participants and are not necessarily those of the sponsors, management, or staff of WTBQ Radio or FST Broadcasting Corporation. WTBQ.
Well, good morning and welcome to this month's episode of the Nonprofit Notebook. I'm Sandy Cassese, President and CEO of Hospice of Orange in Sullivan Counties, and it's very good to be here today. So, you know, you've been listening to me for months now, and as you know, Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties exists to provide respectful and dignified end-of-life care to those individuals and families who are facing a life-limiting illness. As I've mentioned many times before in this program, New York State is actually last in the nation, last for utilization of hospice services. So I'm on a mission to change that. New data that's being reported shows that hospice care actually saves Medicare almost $3.5 billion, that's billion with a B, dollars for patients in their last years of life. Our patient and family surveys show extremely high satisfaction with the care that's received, not only during the time that a patient receives care from us, but also for the bereavement services that we provide to loved ones. Today, I'm going to be discussing the state of hospice services in New York State with Jean Chirico. Jean is president of the Hospice and Palliative Care Association of New York State, also a not-for-profit that represents hospices across the state. The association provides a strong, active voice for patients and their families and provides its members, we're a member, with advocacy, education, peer groups, regulatory resources, and much, much more. So in the spirit of full disclosure, I should tell you that I serve on the Board of Trustees for the Hospice and Palliative Care Association as first vice chair, and I also serve on the Governance, Finance, and Legislative Committees. So with me this morning is Jean Chirico. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Sandy.
Gosh, it's an honor to have you on the program today.
Oh, well, it's an honor to be here and be able to talk about such an important topic.
It truly is important. So if you can you just tell our listeners about your personal vast experience with hospice and why you're so passionate for hospice advocacy?
Sure. Well, I've spent the last 3 decades working in the hospice and palliative care arena, and during that time I've worked with hundreds and thousands of people who were facing a serious illness, and I learned so much about the power of being present and the support that hospice could provide to not only the individual who was sick, but the entire family unit, and how much hospice was there for the entire community. And so I guess I grew up with hospice, and with that knowledge and with that learning, it's just become a part of me that I believe everyone has a right to, and that they need to know that they have access to this gold standard of care.
You know, you have been really a force to be reckoned with in New York State, if I may say so. This is an interesting time. This very week, New York State is putting the finishing touches on the all-important budget. And HPCANES, as we call the Hospice and Palliative Care Association, has been very, very involved in advocating for legislation that will promote the availability and accessibility of quality hospice care for everyone in New York State. And you have been a voice in that that moment, and I thank you for that. So what I'm hoping we can do with our time this morning is to dig into some of the priorities that all of us who represent hospices in New York State see as incredibly vital. So how's that sound?
Sounds good.
All right. So first, let's talk a little bit about some of our asks, as we call them, for the budget. So I'd like to start with something that I think is just incredibly important to all of us. And I talk about this pretty much every month on the show, and that's about advanced care planning. Can you, put some context around that and what our asks are, Jean?
Sure. Well, as you said, when the introduction earlier, New York State is last in the country in utilization of hospice. And there's no one reason for that, but we believe that one of the things we can do to change that is to start having conversations. And those conversations need to not just be reliant on waiting for our physicians to open the door to those conversations. Sometimes we need to start the process of what we hope for, what we want as our as we age and as our conditions change. So that's, to us, that's the process of advanced care planning. It's not a one and done form that you fill out when you go to the doctor or you go to the hospital. It's a process of opening your heart and your family's heart to conversing about what we find so difficult sometimes, and just acknowledging that life changes and we can hope for all the best cures and for the best treatments. But in the reality, someday all of us will face our own mortality. And so advanced care planning is not only a conversation that needs to take place, but it's about learning about what your choices are, learning about what it means when you decide to no longer have CPR or anything like that that is considered aggressive treatment. And so that advanced care planning needs to also be consistent in our view. So we want to make sure that people are getting the right information, the correct information to dispel any myths. And to do that, it needs to be coordinated across our entire state. So with the help of two fantastic hospice champions at the state level, Assemblywoman Monica Wallace and Senator Michelle Hinchey, who we're so grateful for, sponsored a bill that would help us to create an advanced care planning campaign across the state of New York. And that our vision for that is that it might mirror similar public health campaigns that we've all seen, such as those addressing smoking cessation, or perhaps when public health education for mammograms or colon cancer, just as important, is about having conversations.
So correct me if I'm wrong, but last year when our two co-sponsors brought this legislation forward, it was actually unanimously accepted by both chambers, the Assembly side and the Senate side. Is that right?
That's correct. And, you know, I have to say that hospice has really received no pushback from anyone at the Assembly side or on the Senate side when it comes to understanding the need for and the wish to bring hospice to more people. I believe that our officials are on board with that.
I would agree with that. Everyone that I speak with, I think, is actually getting the message, not only that our services are vital, but people have a legal and a moral right to these services. Do you agree, Jean?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's part of the reason for the campaign. It's a lack of awareness of what is available and that it doesn't cost anything and that it can actually help your whole family, and that sometimes accepting hospice is a gift to your family. It's not just about you.
Well, certainly,
as
someone whose family has accessed hospice services, I can tell you that that was my own experience. I'm a nurse. I'm educated in end of life. But, you know, there comes a time where you want to be the family member and looking at things through that lens. And so it was incredibly important to my family when hospice stepped in and helped, you know, take some of the burden for us. So that is certainly something that I think is a clear message that needs to get out to everyone, that the support not only is for the patient themselves, but for everyone, caregivers everywhere. Let's switch up the topic a little bit. So this one's a little bit more interesting in some regards. So we have been, as an association, advocating for some representation at the state level, at the New York State Department of Health, for some time now. I would love for you to just, you know, give us some structure around that and why it's so very important.
Sure. Well, again, I'll say that we have been so privileged to have the support of our champions, Senator Hinchey and Assemblywoman Wallace, who sponsored a bill that would help us get representation at the Department of Health. And this again was unanimously approved in both houses. Unfortunately, the governor did not agree and vetoed this bill for financial reasons, apparently. And yet, we continue to advocate for this. And I think the audience might completely understand when you have professionals, clinicians who are caring for someone near the end of their life, they must be at the top of their game. And it's a very specialized service. And it's a service that is delivered not only in your own home, but it could be delivered in a nursing home or in a hospital setting or in an inpatient or residential facility. And given the location of where these hospice services can be provided, there are numerous regulations have to be considered.
That is the understatement of the century, and I think that's something that the listeners really need to pay attention to. We are a highly regulated industry. That translates into good patient care, correct?
Oh, absolutely. The oversight and the constraints within hospice and the not only what are they required to provide, but, you know, when this benefit was created, my personal opinion, it was, well, a rare governmental gem because they purposely included things like volunteer service and bereavement service that ingrains the hospice in their community. And they become not just a healthcare service, they become community members. And most of our volunteers that come to work for us have received these hospice services, and they want to give back. And so I just use that as an example of the breadth of the healthcare services that hospice delivers. It's not just maybe going into a physician office and having that particular intervention. It's interdisciplinary, and it requires someone or multiple people who recognize not only the regulations, but the skill set, the education that's necessary, and the cross-pollination that's required to assure that hospice care can be delivered wherever the individual is. And that means that somebody has to have the awareness of the fact that hospice might be being delivered in the nursing home. So I can't just create a rule for the nursing home without considering the impact on the hospice trying to care for a dying patient there. That's why we want representation.
Of course. And, you know, if you would, I think a great illustration of this need is the experience of hospices across New York State during the COVID pandemic, the early days. Can you just put some context around that for our listeners?
Sure. Well, I think your listeners know so much better than I the personal impact of the COVID epidemic and the fact that we lost so many New Yorkers during this pandemic and continue to. And at the onset of the pandemic, our hospices never stopped delivering care. And many hospice providers continued to go into dangerous situations when there was not much information on how to protect yourself, what was necessary in order to stop the spread.
It's kind of but horrifying when you continued. Think back to those days, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And the states began to recognize the contribution of the healthcare workers, and the Department of Health put out the most overt to me is when the vaccination finally became available, the Department of Health said, we have to put our healthcare workers number one on the list. The essential workers need to be the front and center to get the vaccine. And they attached a list of all the essential workers, and our hospice workers were not included.
Jean, this is like such a blatant example of why it's so important to have that representation. We're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I would love for you to continue this part of the conversation. I think it's incredibly important.
Dear hospice family, my husband was given less than 6 months. and he was able to be here for 10 and a half months. I think that was because of the care that was given to him by hospice.
Dear Hospice of Orange and Sullivan County, my family is so grateful for the care that hospice provided at the end of Mom's life.
I write this letter to give my thanks and gratitude to the people of hospice who were so understanding and caring in my family's time of need.
The Kaplan Family Hospice residence, it was like a breath of fresh air.
I know that God sent these wonderful people to us.
It was one of the best decisions we had ever made.
I think it lengthened his time on earth.
Call Hospice of Orange and Sullivan, providing generations of care in your community. There are others. Make sure to ask for us by name. Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. Your choice does matter.
I'd just like people to find out about hospice while there was still time.
Hospice is a plan for living.
Live sports are the one true reality entertainment, where a single dramatic moment can become timeless.
He's going to win the 60th running of the Daytona 500.
The power of radio to the imagination of the listener. Tune in to the Motor Racing Network.
WTVQ.
Hi, it's Sandy Cassese, President and CEO of Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties. We're back from the break with my very special guest, Gene Chirico. Gene is representing the Hospice and Palliative Care Association of New York State. So, Gene, before the break, we were talking a little bit about the uncharted territory that hospices found themselves in the early days of the pandemic. And you were talking about how, some directives came down from the New York State Department of Health. And probably the most significant one was around vaccine distribution. Can you just continue that story for our listeners?
Sure. So when the Department of Health put out a request that all essential healthcare workers be first on the list, I think I mentioned that the hospice personnel were not considered essential. And although that might seem like something easily fixed, when a directive comes from the Department of Health and it's incorrect, it requires a significant amount of advocacy and communication and pushback to correct it. And so it took another 2 months of every hospice worker and provider calling their legislators, calling the Department of Health to get that corrected. And that was two months of potential danger to our employees.
Most definitely. I remember my own staff who, you know, were trying to visit patients that we were caring for in the hospital, the nursing home setting, the adult care setting. They were actually being turned away because there was just this lack of understanding of who and what hospice is and what is provided as an essential worker.
Yeah. And I think sometimes we accept what we're given because we don't know what else is available. And it's, you could have a loved one who was dying and think that the care that they're receiving was all that was available, when our goal is to make sure people know that this service is available and the people that provide this service need to be considered essential and need to be considered when the state is making new policy or new rules.
I couldn't agree with you more. And, you know, you were a strong voice for all of us. I certainly had my share of conversation with elected officials and practically anybody who would listen to me on the topic. And I remember the day very well when I personally finally stood in line with my coworkers to get that very first vaccine. And that's just a very good example of advocacy in action. Let's switch the topic a little bit and let's talk a little bit about what's going on in the workforce currently and some of those initiatives for the caregivers and for workforce.
Sure. Well, and I know that workforce is kind of the theme of the year.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But I think what we want to make sure that people understand is that the workforce is not just nurses, although that is very important, and hospice can't survive without our wonderful nurses. But hospice is an interdisciplinary team, and the workforce issues are hitting all kinds of areas that are very important to hospice. So hospice social workers. We have some areas of New York State where social workers are being shared across many multiple rural counties because of the lack and availability of trained social workers there. And other services like home health aides. You know, when you're caring for a loved one at home, it's difficult enough. In hospice, although we can't provide 24/7, we try to make sure that when there's a need, that support is provided through a trained home health aide. And the shortage is such that more and more responsibilities falling to the caregivers. And so part of what we are trying to accomplish as an association is to draw attention to the need to include the caregivers as part of workforce efforts, because they really are the heart and soul of being able to provide hospice in the home. And they deserve the support, and whether that's resources, training, anything that we can provide.
I think you hit on something incredibly important there, Jean. So the hospice philosophy, as you mentioned, we aren't in the home 24 hours a day. And I think that's one of the myths that we sometimes encounter. You know, the whole premise is for us to bring our team in, that interdisciplinary team that you spoke about, and provide education and support to the family or to the caregivers. And so, you know, in my mind, this is probably one of our more important asks. You know, I don't see the labor shortage getting better anytime soon. If you listen to the news, it's not good, right? And we just want to make sure that, you know, that the caregiver is supported in every way possible. I mean, it's been proven time and time again that when hospice is employed in the last months of someone's lives, it's actually incredibly fruitful on many levels. But, you know, we can't neglect the fact that we actually save the system, you know, billions of dollars by helping to keep people out of the hospital, out of settings where, you know, they may incur incredible cost and won't get the same type of service that they would get. Most people say they want to die in their own home, right?
Yeah, and those dollars that are saved, you know, we believe that some of those dollars need to be turned back around to support these initiatives. And at this point, that hasn't been happening. And there's a lot that we could do, but I think, you know, as we look to and continue to embed ourselves in our community, we continue to ask so much of each other instead of relying on what is ever-increasing salary thresholds. So I'll give you an example. The average nursing salary increased about 30% since the onset of COVID.
And rightfully so, that's a good thing.
Yes. And yet the revenue that a hospice brings in was increased about 1.9% overall.
Okay, say that again, because I want people to understand what that disparity is.
Yeah, so as the workforce shortage continues to heighten, there's so much competition for the skilled and unskilled workers. An example is that nursing salaries increased about 30% since the onset of COVID. But in order to compensate and raise those salaries, hospices were not compensated equally in the Medicare revenue that is the largest funder for them. Medicare increased the salaries approximately the daily revenue about 1.9%.
So I want to talk about that daily revenue piece, if we can, for just a second. So I think it's important to illustrate that in New York, nearly every hospice is not-for-profit. There are a couple of for-profits, but we're largely not-for-profit industry. And, you know, as I say all the time, not-for-profit, great, but we don't want to be for loss, if that makes any sense. And so Talk about how hospices get reimbursed. And you know, I've been saying to anybody who'll listen to me, we're not getting, I'll put it in air quotes, raises from Medicare and Medicaid that keeps up with exactly what you're speaking about, the increased wages and how we take care of a patient on a daily basis. And all of their needs are wrapped into our reimbursement.
Yes. So hospice is reimbursed on a daily rate, and it's based on usually the length of stay that an individual's on hospice. And so there's one rate for an individual that's on service under 60 days and another rate for individuals that receive hospice services beyond 60 days in the home. And the average length of stay in New York, unfortunately, is well under 60 days. And the median length of stay is actually about 18 days. And so we're talking about a daily rate that has to include everything the patient might need related to their terminal illness, everything from every medication that they require that's related, and every durable medical equipment such as beds and walkers and wheelchairs. But it also includes all the clinical services that somebody might need, the nursing, the social work, pastoral care, the physician visits. Then the hospice has to take that approximately $200 a day and pay out of that everything the individual requires that's related to their, not only their terminal illness, but any associated conditions.
You know, it's interesting, and I'm going to, you know, I'm just going to probably blow some people's minds, but when we look at our revenue versus our expenses at Hospice of Orange and Sullivan Counties, we look at it obviously every single month, and there are months where the difference between how much we're bringing in and how much we pay out is $5 a day per person. And in some cases, it's a negative number. And I think it speaks directly to the fact that, you know, we absolutely make sure that everything that needs to be done for that patient is done. So we have about a minute left, Jean, and I'm going to give you the floor. If you were to speak to our legislators, and that's something I know you do very well and very faithfully, what's your message to our lawmakers as they are wrapping up the budget?
I would say that for too many years, hospice has been the low man on the totem pole, and it's having an impact on the ability to give this gold standard of care. And it's time that hospices receive their fair share of New York State support, and that includes financial resources as well as representation.
Well, hear, hear. I am going to second that with a giant exclamation point. Jean, I really want to thank you. I direct our listeners to the Hospice of Orange and Sullivan website. It's hospiceoforange.com. Jean, thank you again, and we'll see you next month.